On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Chee, Mr. Curtis Franklin on the show today. Now, you may have heard the administration hosted an InfoSec roundtable with tech giants and CEOs. We'll talk about the outcomes and just how effective it was. Plus, Curtis takes us through the new Joint Cyber Defense Collaborative. Some interesting stuff there. And now, supply chains have been under fire this past year, and technology may be able to save organizations from hitting those speed bumps. Today, we have Yonatan Volovetsky, CTO and co-founder of Jigga. He's going to take us through some new technology about how to streamline parts purchasing from sourcing to quoting payments and ensure efficiency for all organizations. Shouldn't miss it. Twiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 458, recorded August 27th, 2021. What's in your supply chain? This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Compiler, an original podcast from Red Hat discussing tech topics, big, small, and strange. Listen to Compiler on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And by CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike harnesses the power of every click, every action, and every ally to grow stronger and stop cyber threats before they can stop you. Join the fight and experience the power of Falcon Platform for free today at CrowdStrike.com/twit. And by Melissa. The U.S. Postal Service processes more than 98,000 address changes daily. Is your customer contact data up to date? Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that's dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide to this big world of the enterprise. But I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field, starting with our very own security and network expert and all-around tech geek, Mr. Brian Chee-Chiebert. How are you, my friend? What's keeping you busy?
I'm doing great. In fact, the guy that we interviewed from Ubiquia the other week, it looks like I'm going to try and sign up to be a dealer with my partner in Honolulu because we're trying to go and roll out a whole bunch of Wi-Fi 6 and 5G microcell infrastructure for our customers. And that was a really, really cool set of products he had.
Indeed, it was a great show. Great show. I really, really enjoyed it. Actually, I was dealing with hurricanes, which was fun, and family, which is sometimes is a hurricane in itself. So it's good times. Well, speaking of fun, we also have Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's a senior analyst at Omdia, and he's all around tech geek as well. Curtis, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing reasonably well, Lou. No hurricanes to deal with down here, but just plenty of security stuff. It's an interesting time coming off of Black Hat and DEF CON, and now I'm getting ready to present at IWCE, the conference about critical infrastructure and first responder communications. That'll be coming up in September, and that will mean me heading back out to Las Vegas.
Fantastic. Wow. Very busy time of year. Very busy time of year. Well, speaking of busy, we definitely had a busy week in the enterprise, but we definitely should get started. Now, you may have heard President Biden is going to host an InfoSec roundtable with a bunch of tech giants and CEOs. And this definitely signals to us that 2020 will be a great year for the red teams of the world. However, what about the blue teams? We'll talk about that. Plus, supply chain has been under fire the past year. However, technology may be able to save the world from hitting all those speed bumps. Today, we have Yonatan Volovetsky, CTO and co-founder of Jigga, and he's going to take us through new technology that actually can streamline parts purchasing from sourcing to quoting and payments and ensure efficiency for all organizations. Some really interesting stuff, so definitely stick around. But first, like we always do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. Well, it wouldn't be an enterprise week without a breach. That's right. T-Mobile customer data was breached and compromised sensitive information from more than 54 million active former customers was out there. Now, the interesting thing here is the breach might not have been a sophisticated one. In fact, it might have been a relatively trivial one. That's right. The hacker claiming to be responsible for the attack, John Binn, said that T-Mobile security was, quote, awful. That's right. Binn reportedly broke through using a readily available tool to find an exposed router and took a week to delve through customer data stored in data center near East Wenatchee, Washington. Now, Binn, who provided apparent evidence to back up his claims of involvement, said he breached T-Mobile and stole the data to create, quote, noise that drew attention to him. Now, he came forward to highlight his claims and he had been kidnapped in Germany and placed into a fake mental hospital. Now, there wasn't any evidence to support that allegation, but the evidence is the third breach in 2 years and suggests that T-Mobile is still struggling to offer security that matches its rapidly growing customer base. Now, it only hired a new security leader earlier in 2021, for instance. Now, if Binn's claims are accurate, though, the ease of the attack is quite frightening indeed, and it only took a casual hack to put tens of millions of people at risk of fraud and other data crimes. The company may need to scramble if it's going to reassure customers that breach will be rare going forward.
Well, the leaders of the largest tech giants were in Washington, D.C. at the White House this week, and the experience of the cybersecurity summit might just spur them to action. As part of this week's announcements, the Biden administration shared that the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, will work with industry and other partners to develop a new framework to improve the security and integrity of the technology supply chain. That's what came in a release from the summit. Microsoft, Google, IBM, Travelers, and Coalition have committed to joining the initiative. And if you remember the Colonial Pipeline ransomware debacle, this part should provide some comfort. The administration also announced the expansion of the Industrial Control System Cybersecurity Initiative to include natural gas pipelines. The news from private sector companies ranged from billion-dollar investments to driving adoption of multi-factor authentication to including more security training, both in the classroom and in the enterprise. For example, over the next 5 years, Microsoft plans to invest $20 billion to drive efforts to integrate cybersecurity by design and deliver advanced security solutions. The company will make $150 million immediately available in the form of technical services to help federal, state, and local governments with security protection. The company also plans to grow partnerships with community colleges and nonprofits to expand cybersecurity training. As for Google, they plan to invest $10 billion over the next 5 years to strengthen cybersecurity. The money will go toward expanding zero-trust programs, helping secure the software supply chain, and enhancing open-source security. In addition, Google pledges to train 100,000 Americans in areas such as IT support and data analytics, and include education in data privacy and security through the Google Career Certification Program. Training is also part of Amazon's new initiatives, which include the public release of the security training materials it uses to keep its own employees and sensitive data safe from cyber attack. Apple plans to create a new program for security improvements throughout the supply chain. As part of this, it will work with its suppliers, including more than 9,000 companies throughout the U.S., to drive adoption of MFA, security training, vulnerability remediation, and incident response. Now, to IBM, they've committed to training 150,000 people in security over the next 3 years. The efforts will include partnerships with at least 20 historically black colleges and universities to create cybersecurity leadership centers and, in doing so, create a more diverse cyber workforce.
So I decided I was going to go talk about the giant recall for GM on their Chevy Bolt. Now, it's kind of interesting because we're going to be talking to a guest all about supply chain. And this story is definitely a supply chain nightmare. So GM has announced it's recalling every single Chevy Bolt made to date, including new electric utility models, vehicle models, over concerns that a manufacturing defect in the car's LG-made batteries could cause a fire. Well, the Bolt was first recalled in last November after five cars that hadn't been in crashes caught fire. After investigating the problem further, Chevy recalled a second batch in July. The problem was traced to two manufacturing defects that could occur simultaneously. The defects were a torn anode tab and a folded separator. Well, those could create conditions that could lead to a short in the affected cells. So far, the company has identified 10 fires that involve faulty batteries, according to an Associated Press report. Well, the story goes on to basically say that batteries are actually pretty hard to build, and the stabilization elements like cobalt are coming from unreliable sources like the Congo, and you end up with a lot of electrochemical scientists working on experimentation to prevent lithium-ion batteries from going up in flames. I had the opportunity to work with some battery electrochemists while at the University of Hawaii, and battery chemistry is very, very hard stuff to achieve fast charge times without developing memory and not going up in flames. Well, it's almost as hard as rocket science. So anyway, so look for lithium-based batteries going way up in price and not seeing data center power systems going lithium anytime soon. Anyway, the update article said that a misaligned machine in the production line caused a protrusion in the metal for the battery tabs that could potentially poke a hole in another battery and cause that fire. Sounds like a supply chain nightmare if you ask me.
Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the bites. But before we get to the bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Compiler, an original podcast from Ed Red Hat discussing tech topics, big, small, and strange. Now, Compiler comes to you from the makers of Command Line Heroes, another of our sponsors, and is hosted by Angela Andrews and Brent Simoneau. Now, technology can be big, bold, bizarre, and complicated. Now, Compiler unravels industry topics, trends, and the things you've always wanted to know about tech through interviews with the people who know it best. Now, on their show, you will hear a chorus of perspectives from the diverse communities behind the code. Now, Compiler brings together a curious team of Red Hatters to tackle big questions in tech, like what is technical debt? What are tech hiring managers actually looking for? And do you know how to code to get started in open source? The first episode covers a topic of much debate in the tech world. Should managers code? I'm a manager. I definitely code. Now, jumping into the fix, the problem can be very seductive. In this episode of Compiler, you'll hear from a manager who has learned that supporting his team to fix the problem rather than doing it himself might be slower, but it can lead to better results. Now, a managerial position is seen as a milestone of working life. Now, suddenly a person who worked on code begins to step back from those day-to-day tasks. What does that mean? What started as an internal email at Red Hat blossomed into a much deeper discussion about career growth and what can be caught in its wake. Now, have you ever walked into an interview and been asked to work through a code problem on a whiteboard? I definitely have. Now, if you were hired, how much of your work time do you actually spend in front of a whiteboard on the job? It's a good question. Now, in how do you interview for a technical position, Red Hatters cast a skeptical eye toward the dreaded whiteboard interview, but discover they can actually have some real benefits. Now, I checked out the first episode of Should Managers Code and found out it very enlightening. I'll tell you one thing. It's really interesting stuff here and actually really hits home with a lot of things I've actually experienced within the industry. So definitely check it out. Now, the first episode just dropped August 5th, so you can go and download it anytime. Listen to Compiler on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. We'll also include a link on this episode's show page. My thanks to Compiler for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, you may have heard, we talked about it a little bit, about the meeting that happened with the tech giants. There were CEOs from Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple, and confirmed in their attendance. And other large companies were there as well. Google, IBM, Southern Company, JP Morgan were also invited there. Now, the meeting was actually intended to address several things here. In fact, it was intended to address the severe increase of ransomware, online attacks, data breaches, data leaks in the last year. And although we don't know the exact agenda that happened there, there's lots of senior officials that were at the event. And also they wanted to talk a little about supply chain attacks as well as focus on software-driven solutions. Now, a lot of high-profile security breaches were happened last year, and Biden and tech CEOs were supposed to discuss this. Now, it could have been limited to, quote, this month's T-Mobile server breach. We talked about that. 100 million Americans, potentially personal data was out there. July's massive Kaseya ransomware attack, a month-long Geico breach, exposing customers' driver's licenses, numbers, addresses, date births, all that stuff. A misconfigured Experian API that leaked credit scores. That one, we heard about that one quite a while. I was a little bit, ticked off about that one myself. A May attack that took Colonial Pipeline down, disrupting fuel and disruption across the eastern U.S. seaboard. And March attacks targeting small businesses, towns, cities, and local governments. Now, there was also that SIM swapping attack on T-Mobile customers in February, and also December's SolarWinds one with the supply chain attack. In fact, there were sources that only mentioned that CEOs, it's unclear if there was also CISOs as well attending this meeting. Now, there's lots to talk about here because we heard about a lot that has come out. Curtis covered it a little bit, but Curtis, I want to go to you first. Now, was there a good agenda and was there good outcomes that came from this meeting?
Well, I think it was a reasonable agenda. As for good outcomes, we have lots of words, as you always do after one of these things. And many of them were very fine words. No complaints about the words. I think we get to wait now to see how much of this is delivered on. If it's all delivered on, then we'll call it a reasonable step. Is this going to solve all of our cybersecurity problems? Oh, heavens no. But it could be a step in the right direction. It could result in other companies trying to step up to what these very large companies are doing. Here's what I think is interesting. All of these companies recognize that one of the chief issues in Cybersecurity Day is the lack of trained professionals. And so all of them are agreeing that they're going to contribute money to helping to create more trained cybersecurity professionals. That's good. The other thing that we're seeing, and this was especially true in the IBM announcement, was the acknowledgement that cybersecurity has, and in this it echoes normal IT, been a very homogeneous sort of industry. I mean, if you look at the faces around places like Black Hat and DEF CON and just about any other IT event, there are way too many people who look more or less like me, sort of a middling white guy. We need far more women. We need far more people of color. Indigenous individuals, we need people from underrepresented minorities. Why? Not to be politically correct, but to make sure that their life experience and their perspectives are included in our perspectives in cybersecurity. You know, the biggest failures we have had in cybersecurity have come because someone said, no one will ever want to do X, or I can't imagine someone doing X. Having more diverse individuals work on security teams mean that there will be fewer cases of X being outside the realm of possibility when they're thinking and planning. And that is a very, very good thing.
I agree. You bring up a good point. And Chibert, I want to throw this to you because the point that Curtis brought up was around the fact that obviously a lot of organizations have a problem with educating their users on what to do and what not to do when it comes to cybersecurity. Now, we saw a lot of came out of this summit that they're going to be spending a lot of money, these organizations, on cybersecurity in the future. One of the interesting thing that I saw, though, obviously, was that they want to develop this more public sector framework to help improve security and the integrity of technology and for supply chain. The question back to you is, with these companies, they have their focus areas. And they've outlined one common thing that could happen with education. But the question is that going to be enough? Like, are these companies, obviously, they have their own personal agendas. I work for one of them. All of them are going to spend a lot of time and money to help organizations do the right thing. But in the same sense, do we need help from the public sector as well here?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. We need more heterogeneity, I guess is the one word, Okay, so it's no secret I was working in the federal government for quite a while. That was my first retirement. And the problem is the security specialists in the federal government are very, very homogeneous, just like Kurt was mentioning. And there was not enough people saying that they wanted different views. It had to be my way or the highway all too often. A lot of people I worked with just weren't interested in listening to something other than that person that fit that mold just perfectly. And the problem is the bad guys don't fit that mold even a little bit. They're thinking out of the box. And that's one thing that I really and truly think the federal government needs to do, corporate America needs to do. We need to start thinking out of the box. So while I applaud that people are throwing money into education programs to try and educate more security specialists, I think we also need to kind of break some of these molds. There's this one young lady that I absolutely adore. She goes by Snubs, Shannon Morse. She does not fit the mold, and she has paid for it several times with people ignoring her, even though she is very well educated on security issues. She's helped bring out some great products from folks like Hack 5. We need people that are going to be willing to look a little bit around that corner, you know, not quite, you know, that perfect mold. And I think that is going to make the biggest difference. Now, I do agree that, you know, we all need to make sure we're all following the same rules, the rules of engagement, so to speak. But I think the time of having all these duplicate security specialists is over. We need people that are, let's call it, we need those long-haired hippie freaks that are willing to come out, according to that old song. We need the folks that don't fit the mold, that can think differently and have different points of view. So I think that's my biggest wish for this Blue Ribbon Committee, is that they stop or slow down trying to create cookie cutter security specialists. We need people that are going to think out of the box. We need people that are willing to work with the industry and government to try and level the playing field.
I think it's great to end with that one. Thank you, Chibert. I do want to move on to the next bite because it's a pretty interesting one. A little bit out of Black Hat. Curtis, you want to drive that one?
I'm happy to. Yeah, we did have a lot of activity. One of the things that I noted about Black Hat and DEF CON, for that matter, was the willingness of people from the government and from very high levels of the government to be there, either physically or virtually, as speakers and participants on panels. Well, Jan Easterly, the newly appointed director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, you'll hear us say, officially invited the security industry to team up with the federal government to proactively address and defend against the growing wave of cyber attacks. In a pre-recorded virtual keynote at Black Hat, she talked about this new collaborative and was happy to talk about what it was made of and what it hoped to do. Now, the Joint Cyber Defense Collective, or JCDC, is supposed to bring together government and private industry to work together on cyber defenses. The aim is, quote, to establish a shared situational awareness of the threat environment, end quote. Well, what does that mean? That means that government and private industry get to share information on what they are seeing, what they're encountering, either in chatter as they look at dark web chat rooms, or in what they are facing as frontline responders in the cybersecurity wars. Now, in addition to CISA, key federal government participants in the JCDC include Defense Department, U.S. Cyber Command, NSA, FBI, Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Department of Energy, Department of Transportation, EPA, and FDA. In addition, private sector members have come on board. They include AWS, AT&T, CrowdStrike, FireEye, Mandiant, Google Cloud, Microsoft, Lumen, Palo Alto Networks, and Verizon. Now, depending on your participation in the industry, you might not recognize all of these, but let me tell you that CrowdStrike, FireEye, and Mandiant are huge presences in the cybersecurity sector, while Palo Alto is enormous, a player up there next to Cisco and Juniper Networks in the router and switch market for huge enterprises and giant cross-country and global networks. What they're talking about is making cybersecurity more and more and more a team sport. In a piece that I wrote over on LinkedIn on my way home from Black Hat, I said that one of the things that came out of Black Hat and DEF CON is that it's not just about you. Cybersecurity isn't about what affects you and what affects you alone. It's about how the things hitting you can have an impact on your supply chain, on the members of your community, on the members of your industry. And this new initiative recognizes more and more that this is true on a national and even global network. Now, Easterly talked about three examples of recent collaborative efforts between CISA and private sector security researchers. There were talks about things like vulnerabilities hitting Kaseya and the way that Kaseya gave information to the CISA that helped manage the national response and a couple of others. On one light note, Easterly put up a slide depicting a logo that paid homage to the legendary rock band AC/DC with the lightning bolt style logo JC/DC, along with a recorded electric guitar riff. It's nice that they can have a light moment. I'm all in favor of it. But the most important thing is going to be the serious effort that goes around this and the serious results that they can bring to the industry. Now, I want to turn first to Brian. You know, you've worked in government, you've worked in the private sector, you've worked between those camps. What has kept them from working together more closely in the past? And do you think someone at Easterly's level can put together an initiative to break down the walls?
The insider view is, too often, people trying to protect their own turf. You know, if you aren't seen as being critical to the national infrastructure or whatever, you may not get that nice big fat budget in Congress. Now, having said that, there are some really great efforts. There is an organization called InfraGuard, spelled InfraGuard, and it's run by the Federal Bureau of Investigation and provides a public-private conduit so that smaller corporations, small, medium-sized, even large corporations, have a way of getting information that is normally flagged as government use only. It has done an amazing amount of good educating the smaller corporations and so forth, the community basically, on what they can do to try and protect themselves. And it's not just limited to cybersecurity. It's also things like fraud, card skimming for credit card fraud and things like that. They've done an amazingly good job, and the bar to join the group is not that high. Basically, you just have to be an American citizen and you shouldn't have a criminal record. Hopefully, that's not a high bar. So I think there's going to be more and more public-private cooperation. We need to do that. It's we're a little behind. Europe has been a lot better. Israel has been amazing. It's time for the United States to catch up, and you know, public-private cooperation can solve some of these problems once we stop running around like chickens without a head.
There are many things that headless chickens might be good for, but running cybersecurity isn't one of them. Lou, you're in an interesting position because you have, from a critical infrastructure point of view, the job of being part of nearly everyone's supply chain. So, you know, from where you sit, do you find it comforting? Do you find it confining to have this kind of, you know, large government collaboration going on? You know, where do you come down on whether this is going to be good or just more dead weight sitting on top of actual cybersecurity?
You know, personally, I think that this could be good. I mean, the whole idea of bridging the gap between public, private, and making sure there's partnerships, and then making sure there's information sharing can really ensure that organizations, people, consumers can do a better job here in all different facets of security and technology. So I think this is definitely could be good. Like I said, a lot of organizations out there, whether it's Google, Microsoft, Amazon, they are battling these things every day. They spend, like we see, billions of dollars in these sectors, and then also bridging the gap and sharing a lot more information with the public, as well as the private sectors, and just making sure we have transparency with that. I think that's a really important thing. I think this is definitely going to be an important thing for the industry, as we move forward. And this is how we're going to tackle, the ever growing, universe of cybersecurity.
You know, it's interesting. A couple of years ago, I went to a conference that involved a lot of very high-level government officials. And one of the topics of discussion on a panel was whether there should be a Department of Cybersecurity. So making it a cabinet-level position like the Department of Homeland Security. There were a couple of people who said yes, because that would show how important it is. But the general consensus was that making it a department, making it a cabinet level position, would in fact add more overhead, more institutional weight than the effort needed. And so to me, what this is a level to try and get the effort at the right level. So this is something that is at a high enough level so that it can bring a lot of people together. I mean, obviously, Secretary Easterling is able to bring a lot of force to bear on this, and yet it doesn't have the institutional dead weight of a lot of administrative effort that goes into anything that starts getting bureaus and departments and offices involved. I'm in favor. I hope we see a lot of good stuff about it going forward, and I look forward to reporting on this as we go along. Well, that should be it for the Bites. We've got a great guest ahead, but something tells me that Lou has a sponsor to tell us about before we get there.
Thank you, Curtis. Indeed, I do. And that sponsor is CrowdStrike. I've seen the headlines, and we talk about it all the time here on Twit. Ransomware attack after ransomware attack, holding businesses hostage. It can feel like it's only a matter of time before they come for you, and you'll have to decide. Do you pay or do you lose everything? But you can have a third option. That's right. Do you defeat your adversaries before the fight even starts? With CrowdStrike, you're not alone in the battle against ransomware. Now, a secure future demands a shared defense, and that's why CrowdStrike's Falcon platform uses their threat graph power by advanced AI to analyze behavior on your devices, servers, and cloud workloads to find the threats and stop them in their tracks. Now, their security platform delivers the industry's most powerful set of tools to fight today's most sophisticated cyber attacks, all delivered via the cloud through a lightweight, intelligent agent. Now, Forrester study finds Falcon Complete delivers a 403% return on investment with 100% confidence. Now, CrowdStrike harnesses the power of every click, every action, and every ally to grow stronger and stop cyber security threats before they can stop you. Now, Falcon Complete stops breaches every hour of every day through expert management, threat hunting, monitoring, and remediation, and it's backed by CrowdStrike's breach prevention warranty. That's right. They don't just say it. They guarantee it for Falcon Complete managed customers who receive a warranty covering up to $1 million in the event of a data breach. Now, terms and conditions apply. The Gartner Magic Quadrant named CrowdStrike a leader for endpoint protection platform for 2021. Join the fight and experience the power of Falcon Platform for free today at CrowdStrike.com/twit. That's CrowdStrike.com/twit. CrowdStrike, because what we've built together is worth defending together. And we thank CrowdStrike for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. And today we have Yonatan Volodesky. He's the CTO of Jigga. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me here, Lou.
Absolutely. Now, this is a very interesting topic because supply chains have been hit hard in the past 2 years. But before we get to that, I do want to, you know, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a short journey through tech and what brought you to Jigga?
Yeah, for sure. I've been a software developer for the past decade. And besides building software and like hacking stuff, I like to see the big picture, you know, like having context about the product, about the big picture, the market, the marketing, and so on. And this is basically how I got into startups. So I started my first startup a few years ago, which was like a very tough MBA for my next startup. And about more than a year ago, I met my two co-founders, and we started this amazing product called Jigga.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, you know, like I said, supply chain has been hit really hard this past couple of years, the pandemic, hacker after hack. Jigga wants to disrupt things here. Can you maybe take us through what's going on and how your technology can help?
Yeah. So I guess most of your audience here are like software engineers, and as software engineers, you probably know that if you need a component for the whole software for your whole repository, you just do like npm install or pipe install, and then you get the whole component just transferred into your code base without too much overhead. If I'll tell you that you need to go and fetch a CD with a bunch of code from the other side of the country, you'll tell me like, hey, Jonathan, you're like from the 90s or something like this. So for mechanical engineers, it's still the case. If a mechanical engineer will need a quote for like a specific component, you will have to spend weeks on procurement, negotiating, asking for a quote. It means that engineers become bureaucrats. And this is the problem we're trying to solve.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do have friends that actually work in this industry. I worked with a lot of MEs when I was in college. You're right. I think there's a lot of challenge here where, you know, organization, whether it's be a serial company trying to do a supply, a line of machines that actually handle packaging, whether it be, a furniture company, you know, a lot of these companies, they need parts, they need specialty gear, and they need to find a way to either build these things or supply themselves with the appropriate parts. Now, what were the problems that you've seen in the last couple of years, and how is Jigga going to help here in this particular model?
The problem is mainly that, again, engineers becoming bureaucrats, and like they're managing like a budget of sometimes millions and sometimes billions of dollars on like procurements of custom parts on like spreadsheets and like emails, like endless email threads. Mm-hmm. When I say custom parts, it can be like, you know, like your AirPods. It can be like the lid of the AirPods. It's a unique design from the engineering Apple. And when he needed to do like versioning and revision on it, he had to go back and forth with the suppliers. Each one of those revisions will take weeks. This is like also affecting on go-to-market, on product deliveries, which cost a lot of money to companies, and engineering labor hours, which is a crazy amount of money. And also like companies not making data-driven decisions about purchasing parts, so they go and do like overpriced decisions about which supplier to go with.
Now, there are some companies out there that they are kind of the middleman. They facilitate the communication, collaboration, and the purchasing of these things between companies. What makes Jigga different from those companies?
We don't like to take the middleman part so much. We like to give people the tools, like to give both parts, like the mechanical engineers and the suppliers, the tools. We realize that communication is like the key for it. We cannot really mask the supplier. There's a lot of let's say professional feedback that mechanical engineers need to ask the suppliers. And we see that a lot in the system, communicating about like specific tolerances or specific requirements. We are launching like really cool features about like collaborating on the CAD, so people can say like, okay, this is like a little bit too thin for me, I cannot do it with my machines. And then this is like, they can go back and forth much easier.
Now, when I was in, back in the day, I actually worked with Ford and Dana Corp, and we did a lot of work for like Universal Joint Manufacturing, and we built some parts, we built some designs that would measure this. And a lot of it was very proprietary. It was very, behind the scenes, lots of potential, patents that could come out of it. How do you handle these types of things when the company comes to you and says, okay, like we need to go and manufacture a part or find a part that might require an NDA or a non-disclosure of some kind, but we still need to be able to manufacture it at scale?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lou, because we work mainly with enterprise companies, and those companies have like really strict policies in everything related to NDAs and data security. So basically, they sign an NDA with us, and we sign our suppliers, our top suppliers, like an NDA. And in some cases, they will have like an approval system for each supplier. So they will say like, okay, I want this supplier and that supplier, and I don't want this supplier.
So you say you sign NDAs and you kind of facilitate that. What about when I send you these designs and I send you these files? What happens with those? Are they secured somewhere? How do they flow through the system?
Yeah, so this is also like an issue for like many enterprise companies, and we supply them like, the best, let's say the best practices in terms of like data security. So this is also an advantage on Jigga on like emails, which are like much, much more hackable than keeping them in like stored in like 256-bit encryption.
Now, there is another problem. A lot of times organizations kind of at the other end, they're kind of obviously the buyers, and they're looking for their parts. They put out there, they're waiting for these things in order to move things forward, whether it's manufacturing or supplying customers. How are we as buyers, let's say, protected? Like making sure that we get these parts, ensuring that they're of the appropriate quality that we need, they match spec, that kind of thing.
Yeah, this is another service that we give to our customer for like an extra fee. So especially like enterprise companies that we will deal the overhead for them. So we, for example, connected to UPS and FedEx, and we fetch the rates. We coordinate the shipping automatically through our system, so our engineers don't have to deal with it anymore. I think this is crazy that engineers need to do like logistics and operation work instead of like planning.
And what about quality control? I mean, we talk about, there's a little bit of planning in there, but also, once you do this at scale, you have to ensure that the things that I'm actually going to receive are of the highest quality. What can happen there?
Yeah, that's correct. So our customers basically can supply if they want like a COC certificate from the supplier, or they want to purchase like an extra QA services from us. This is also something we give them.
Now, what if there's like in a large order? What if there's a mistake? What happens then?
then we come and we mediate. So this is, again, we don't like to be the middleman and cut like huge like fees on top of corporations because it doesn't make sense. Our business model is basically around like we charge like a subscription model and then like a very small fee for like the mediation, an escrow fee, that if something goes wrong, we will be there to mediate. But other than that, we like both sides to communicate by themselves and figure it out, and handle it nicely.
Now, you guys, when you first started, you started out in spawning in funding in Indiegogo and Kickstarter. How did you promote these things on those platforms? Like what was the value that you were trying to bring to these platforms, and how successful were they?
Oh, we didn't really fund anything on Kickstarter. Like, our story is that we were completely bootstrapped until January, which you go to Y Combinator. And since then, we're like rocking it.
Got it. So you're actually selling, you're spawning projects yourself on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Is that correct?
No, but we are like connecting enterprise mechanical engineers from enterprise companies. And then we like streamline the whole communication with the supplier. So a mechanical engineer, let's say in Apple or in Boeing, he will have to design some kind of a part for his plane or for his like, you know, AirPods. And then he will have to source the supplier and communicate with them and make all the quality control. So instead of doing it by emails and spreadsheets, he will just do it with the Giga platform, which will give him all the benefits.
Right. Well, when we come back, we have a lot more to talk about here because there's always some more things to talk about when it comes to supply chain, and I'll bring my co-host back in. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of this week in enterprise tech, and that's Melissa. Now, having accurate customer data is crucial for the success of your business. Now, did you know that nearly 36 million address changes were processed by USPS in 2020? That's a huge chunk of customers you could be missing out on. 30% of customer data goes bad each and every year, but Melissa can help make sure your data is current and accurate. Now, Melissa's tools have helped businesses maintain fresh data for over 35 years, which explains why over 10,000 businesses trust the address experts. And Melissa has renewal rate of over 92%, proof that companies love Melissa, and you will too. Now, you can verify addresses, emails, phone numbers, and names in real time with Melissa. Melissa's global address verification service verifies addresses for 240 plus countries and territories at the point of entry. Now, tired of having duplicate customer information in your database? Well, with Melissa's data matching, you can eliminate clutter and duplicates, increase accuracy of the database, and reduce postage and mailing costs. Now, get the information that completes your customer profiles. Better add customer demographic information to your records, such as marital status or even social media handles. Now, Melissa's flexible deployment options offer different platforms to suit any preference, business size, or budget. Now, with flexible on-premise web service, secure FTP processing, and software as a service delivery options, Melissa also has their new Lookups app on iOS and Google to search addresses, names, and more just at your fingertips. Now, Melissa continually undergoes independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security. That's right, privacy and compliance as well requirements. Now, SOC 2, HIPAA, and GDPR compliant there. Now, Melissa's Global Support Center also offers 24/7 world-renowned support if you sign up for a service level agreement, inquire today. Now, Melissa is still supporting communities and qualifying essential workers during COVID-19. See if your organization qualifies for 6 months of free service by applying online at melissa.com. We'd also like to congratulate Melissa for being named a leader in address verification and data quality by G2 Crowd in their spring 2021 report. Congratulations. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in their API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. That's melissa.com/twit. And we thank Melissa for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've talked with Yonatan Volovetsky, CTO and co-founder of Giga, about supply chain, some of their new technologies and how they're helping organizations and their supply chain. But I do want to bring my co-host back in. I want to throw it over to Kurt first. Kurt?
Well, I appreciate that. My question starts, you know, you were talking about the fact that your customers will send you their plans, send you the list of components they're going to need. My question is whether Giga gets involved in the design process to help your customers build products that might be more easily sourced. I mean, how much do they depend on you for that kind of information?
Yeah, so we really don't like to get involved in everything that's related to like the engineering itself. We think the engineers are like smart enough and grown up enough to do the design themselves. We like to assist them with all the overhead. So when they do put the design, like, and they drop it inside Giga, we just help them to get it to the manufacturer, that the manufacturer understands the requirement, because we see this is the biggest problem, that there is like a lack of communication between the MEs to the suppliers. There is always like a missing configuration or requirement or like some tolerances that is missed out.
All right. So you don't get involved there, but now here's something that I have heard people talk about for a long time. You know, the ERP programs like SAP, like Oracle, they are deeply embedded in their clients' design and procurement processes. Do you get involved in integrating into those at all? Is that something that your customers ask you to do so that they can, have a smoother process that is automated through their ERP program?
Absolutely. So enterprise companies ask us specifically which ERPs or like management software PLM that they're using, and we do the integration for them. We would like the engineers to do the least amount of paperwork and bureaucratical work, because the ERP and the PLMs are like a lot of the time just generating more paperwork and more bureaucratical work for them. And we try to eliminate that.
Fantastic. Thank you. I'm going to bring Cheebert in as well. Cheebert.
Okay. So I'm Mr. Small Business, and I'm just wondering, is Jigga appropriate for the small guys, the ones that are just trying to kickstart a new business with a product? Because I've seen all kinds of problems with errors or sourcing problems, especially when you have to start dealing with mainland China. So are you willing to work with the small people that small, or are you someone we need to aspire to once we grow up?
Yeah, that's a good question. We are focusing on enterprise, but we will never say no to a small business. We've been a small business, and we understand the hassles of small businesses, so like startups and design studios that we've been all working with us. Maybe some of the integration, like the heavy integrations, like ERP integrations, as you mentioned before, we will not do for like a small business of like 10 engineers. But absolutely, we will accept them to the system, and we will expose them to the list of vetted vendors from all around the world that we have.
Fabulous. Now, you mentioned at the beginning of the interview something called Y Combiner. That's not something that a lot of people are familiar with. What is it? And how does it affect you?
You mean Y Combinator?
Yes, thank you. Sorry, I blew that one.
That's okay. Y Combinator is the leading startup accelerator in the world. They sit in Mountain View, California. And it's like twice a year, handpicked startups from all around the world going to Mountain View, California, and working on the startup and getting access to a little bit of pre-seed money and network from the best network in the US, in the world. It was interesting because the past year or so, it's been held over Zoom because COVID was, really difficult to fly around and travel. So everything was in Zoom. So we are based in Tel Aviv, and we had to work like basically in opposite hours from California time.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned this before when we were talking a little bit about the processes that you guys handle and manage. Now, a lot of times organizations will come along and they'll say, okay, I have this part, it needs to be manufactured, but it's a specialty thing, the specialty manufacturing part. And so you said you had some relationships with manufacturers out there. Now, do you go and start new relationships with other manufacturers if it's specialty, or how are you handle that? Is it more, there's a little bit more of a manual process, or is there technology behind that?
Yeah, so if it's required from us, like our customer support team will be happy to assist. Like always, like the human effect is very important to us. So actual people will be helping our customers. However, like we have a messaging system that is really tailored made for this specific industry. So they have like their own features, like talking over the CAD, for example. They can comment on a specific part on the CAD file, which is the 3D file, and then they can talk about like very complex parameters in the design.
Now, another example of this, like a lot of organizations, Right, right. So a lot of organizations, they'll come along and they'll say, hey, we want this part to be made of a specific material. A lot of times you 3D print and, you know, use the filament of a specific type, whether it's stronger or not so strong, needs to handle heat, not handle heat. And you go to a manufacturer and they'll say, okay, yeah, we'll build it to spec. But then they run out of that particular material and they need to use something else, something maybe equivalence class. Now, do you handle that relationship and making sure that they find the right material that's equivalence class? Or what goes on there?
Yeah, like our operation team is really deeply involved, like in everything that related to like specific material, specific requirement that the customer have, and which supplier is the best. So it happened more than once that, as you said, like they started a process and then they needed like help from another supplier. So we matched the supplier to the supplier. So a supplier become also a buyer in a way. Because we are a marketplace, we have this network effect, so suppliers can help each other, and we help them, assist them also manually, but with our customer success team, and also with our technology that helps them to source suppliers from various disciplines very easily.
Now, as a manufacturer, like let's say we'll flip the coin here for a second. As a manufacturer, why would they want to work with you? What would be the good reason for them to be part of your marketplace? What would be a good reason for them to be, you know, in relationship with you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lou. Like the killer feature for suppliers, for both suppliers and for buyers, is the auto quoting. We developed an algorithm that can basically learn from each supplier what will be the price. So let's go again to the AirPods example. When the engineers in Apple designed those AirPods for the first time, it was unique. There was nothing like this in the whole world. So there is no price tag for it. It's not like you can go on Amazon and buy a part for something that never existed. So the price is like quoting the price is something that is very hard work for most of the suppliers. My co-founder Asaf used to be a supplier before he founded Giga, and most of his time would go to like manually RFQs, like request for quote for his buyers. And we automate this. We created an algorithm so each supplier will have his own pricing profile. So we save them tremendous time just by, you know, being on Giga and joining the platform. Second is, of course, exposed to all the demand from various customers like Intel, Dollar Shave Club, Israeli Aerospace Industry, ICL, many corporates that they will never be exposed to without us.
Fantastic. Well, unfortunately, all good things come to an end. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for being here. Can you maybe tell the folks at home where they can get a chance to find out more about Giga and maybe even get started as a buyer?
Yeah, so you can go to giga3d.com and you can request book a demo from us, and we will get back to you shortly. Also, this is like shameless advertising here, but we do look for like really cool position. We look for like a mechanical engineers that want to level up and go to like a growth and marketing role. And we also look for developers to help us build the product. This is really exciting opportunities.
Fantastic. Exciting stuff. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Well, folks,
thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Well, folks, so you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. It's definitely a team effort. And I got the best team in the industry, starting with our co-host, Mr. Curtis Franklin. Thank you so much for being here. Where can the people find you and all of your amazing work?
Well, thanks, Lou. I'm going to be writing some more I'm going to be posting it on LinkedIn. I've also got some stuff coming out over the Omdia site. And it's nice to know that our friends at Dark Reading are completing a site redesign that includes the Omdia page. So lots of places where I'm going to be seen in the next couple of weeks. And then, as I said, I'm getting ready for IWCE. Got some more conferences that I'm going to be participating in later on this year. As always, though, people can find me on Twitter, KG4GWA, over in LinkedIn, where I'm starting to post some of my writing. Follow me there. Hope to see everyone commenting and reading. Let me know what you're interested in learning about the world of cybersecurity.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, we also have to thank Mr. Brian Chi. Brian, what's going on for you in the coming weeks? What can people get a hold of you?
Well, you know, there's been an awful lot of house repairs, but I'm trying to get back into the saddle and do different things. And you know what? The Twyatt Riot is definitely helping me with that. And you know, I'd love to hear from you. So I am ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter. But you're also welcome to drop me an email. I am Cheebert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T at twit.tv. Or better yet, drop a line to twiet@twit.tv and that'll hit all our guests. We'd love to hear from you. We've had some great suggestions, and I do keep a list, and I'm trying to book guests that fulfill your fondest wishes. Take care.
Thank you, guys. Always love having you here. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who comes in each and every week to get your enterprise and IT goodness, and want to make it easy for you to watch and listen. Get your enterprise news. Go to our show page right now, twit.tv/twiet. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, show notes, co-host information, and guest information, and those links that we do during this show, the lift of the stories. But more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice, and listen on any one of your devices, on any one of your podcast applications. We're on all of them. And definitely subscribe, because that's how you support the show. Plus, you may have also heard about Club Twit. That's right. It's a members only ad free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that only you can get. You can't get anywhere else. That's right. It's only $7 per month. And one of my favorite things that comes along with it is the exclusive access members only Discord channel. We have some great people in there right now doing some great chattings, great discussions, great topics going on. Some really fun and interesting conversations and content there. Love it. Love it. Love it. Join Club Twit and be part of this movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your family members, your coworkers, your friends with the gift of Twit, because we talk a lot about some fun tech topics here on the show, and definitely guarantee they will find it fun as well. So definitely ask them to check it out. Now, you can always subscribe. Now, after you subscribe, you know, we also do this show live. That's right. Live.twit.tv. We do it live 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Friday. Come see the behind the scenes, all the banter. Come see how the pizza's made. That's right. Come see all the fun that we have here on Twit. And of course, if you're going to watch the show live, we also have a live chat room that's been around for a while, the irc.twit.tv. We have a lot of great characters in there. They're supplying great topics, great questions, great show titles, great stuff. So definitely join the chat room as well. Plus, you can always find me, definitely find me and hit me up over at Twitter as well. Like the other guys, twitter.com/LouMM. There you'll find all my enterprise tidbits that I'm posting. Definitely DM me with show ideas as well. Plus, I also have great conversations with people like you, so definitely ping me. Of course, if you want to know what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, I post some stuff out there, but also you can check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post the latest and greatest ways you can customize your office experience and make it more productive for you. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially thank you to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week. We couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support. I also want to thank all the engineers and staff at Twit. I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. That's right. He does all the bookings, the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Cheaper, for all your support. Now, before we sign out, we do have to thank our TD for today. He's normally our editor as well, Mr. Victor B. Victor, you got a camera over there on you still?
Yeah,
there he is, Batman himself. Victor, it's always great seeing you. Can you maybe give us a little hint of what's going on Twit coming this week?
Just a lot of shows.
yeah, lots of good stuff.
Yeah, it's nice being back in studio and seeing you guys again. So,
yeah, it's great to see you guys. Fantastic. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twit.
Android may be just another operating system, but when you check out All About Android, you'll realize that Android's also a ton of fun. Join me, Jason Howell, and my co-hosts, Florence Ion and Ron Richards, and a whole slew of guests that we invite on the show every week. Every Tuesday, in fact, we talk about the latest Android news, hardware, apps, and we answer a ton of your Android-related questions as well. Don't miss All About Android at twit.tv.